They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Why investors are yearning for Chinese data. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. U.S. markets weren't fazed by the Mueller report. They don't seem to be paying too much attention to Brexit, and there's not a lot of earnings to go on. So whatever data we get coming up is going to be pounced on. Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors. Good morning.
Good morning.
You have described this period in markets as a black hole. Why?
Because there's really a black hole of data. We don't have a lot of information to go on. It's just a lot of murkiness. And we're waiting. Earnings haven't started yet. We're close to the quarter close. But we're not going to see company managements coming out and talking about how their businesses have done or what they're feeling in the economy for another couple of weeks. And that, I think, leads to a point when you're at the most risk. Because when you don't have the facts to cling to, that's when emotion runs highest. And sentiment can sway the market and move it extreme. One way or the other.
One big piece of information we do expect to get on Sunday is the Purchasing Manager Index from China, which is a measure of business investment. Why are we so concerned about that?
So initially, there was concern that Europe was slowing, and that alone was manageable. When we compounded that with the thought that the Chinese economy might be slowing, that really started to stoke the fears of American investors. Now we're waiting for additional data from China because some of their manufacturing data has been weak. They want to see that the stimulus packages that the Chinese government have started to deploy are starting to work. To have the U.S. market and the U.S. economy recover and keep growing from here, we need some tailwinds from other places.
Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors, joining us via Skype. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
The American nuclear energy industry hasn't built a new plant in 3 decades. But in one place, it is getting a little bit of a lifeline. More than $3 billion in new federal loan guarantees has given new life to a beleaguered over-budget project in Georgia, as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports from our sustainability desk.
The loan guarantees helped to make American nuclear cool again, as Energy Secretary Rick Perry put it in Georgia Friday. The construction project there plans 2 reactors, churning out carbon-free electricity 24/7. It is the only nuclear construction project in the land and needs to get over the finish line, says analyst Christy Tezak at Clearview Energy Partners.
I think it is important philosophically in terms of whether or not the nation considers nuclear power an important part of the overall resource mix.
Nuclear makes 19% of the country's electricity, but it's losing ground to cheap natural gas and wind and solar. Critics of the Georgia plan say the government is throwing good money after bad. Tom Pyle is an ex-oil lobbyist who's worked on the Trump energy transition team.
The real challenge here is why the federal government should be involved in the business of picking energy winners and losers.
This nuclear project is now 5 years overdue, and according to industry estimates, $14 billion over budget. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Last month, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia went on a tour through Pakistan, India, and China. These are, incidentally, the fastest growing markets for Saudi oil, and the Crown Prince pledged significant investments there. These countries are also, incidentally, not Europe or the United States, where the Crown Prince's reputation has been dramatically damaged by his implication in the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Edward Goldberg is assistant professor of political economy at NYU Center for Global Affairs, and he sees something very notable in the fact that Saudi Arabia is having to work so hard to cement relationships with its oil customers. Professor Goldberg, good morning.
Good morning.
Why would the de facto ruler of one of the world's biggest oil-producing countries have to go on a sales trip?
Basically, because his main commodity, oil, is no longer in such demand. Since oil was really became the thing for Saudi Arabia in the late 1930s, they didn't have to follow any normal rules of economics. The world came to them. Michael Porter from Harvard talks about the supplier power, where the supplier can be the boss of the customer because there are few suppliers. Well, up until recently, that's how the Saudis acted.
Then how did the tables turn?
The tables turned, one, because of American fracking. The U.S. in 2005 imported 13 million barrels a day of oil. It's projected next year that they're going to import 330,000 barrels a day. At the same time, the GDP in the U.S. grew by 25% over the same period.
I would have thought that the de facto ruler of one of the world's largest oil producers would be trying to get ahead of the future, build battery factories, attract solar energy companies.
Well, you know, one of the problems is they have no human capital investment. The majority of college graduates in Saudi Arabia are with divinity degrees.
Does this mean that Saudi Arabia's control over oil prices is diminished?
To a certain extent, yes, because of fracking. Well, because of alternative energy and because of fracking. Royal Dutch Shell, as you know, one of the largest oil companies in the world, want to become the world's largest electric company. And this is because of the growth of electric cars. I mean, you won't need the gas station so much.
How does this change the future of the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia?
Oh, I think tremendously. About a couple of weeks ago, the U.S. Senate, the Republican-controlled U.S. Senate, voted that the president should no longer support the Saudi adventure in Yemen. Think about that. Would that have happened 10 years ago? Would Trump be talking about getting troops out of Syria if oil was still so important to us from the Middle East? It's a different world.
Edward Goldberg, professor of international political economy at NYU Center for Global Affairs. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.